society and talking over it. ARRL and FCC has said there are dispensations for ham radio operators, but the people who are law enforcement in the five boroughs of New York City say, no, that doesn't count. In New York City, you cannot be talking into a microphone, even handheld, while there. So I've heard stories like that. Other people who know of law enforcement problems, I've heard a number of people on repeaters say, I see a policeman driving up behind me. I'm going to lay the microphone down for the next 30 seconds while he goes by. So that's why you're not going to hear from me. I've heard a number of people say that, to be on the safe side. Anybody have any further comments on law enforcement and ham radio while mobiling? Give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
W2TJA, and I've gotten three tickets already using my ham in the car.
Okay, W2TJA, were you in the five boroughs of New York City or maybe in Connecticut? I think Connecticut is also very persnickety on that. TJA, please start off with your handle and then that information.
This is W2TJA, and I was in Suffolk County, New York when I got the tickets. One was on Sunrise Highway in Oakdale, and the other one was in Port Jefferson, New York.
Oh, and you explained, of course, it's ham radio, and the policeman said it doesn't count. You're not allowed to be talking into a mobile device while driving. Is that basically what he was saying? And what is your name, sir? GJA, K2RIW.
My name is Tom. I live in West Babylon, and yes, I explained to him that it was a ham radio and not a mobile device, and he told me flat out, excuse my French, I don't give an effing shit what you're talking on. You're getting a ticket.
And that ticket itself allowed you to appear before an administrative law judge. What was his pronouncement, and what was the fine? And I think you said you've gotten three tickets. Does that mean you've been to court three times? Back to you, Tom.
When I appeared before the judge told me I was using a communication device within my vehicle, which was illegal in Suffolk County, and I tried to explain to him that it was a ham radio, and he also said he did not care that I was taking my eyes off the road, and I got a failure to something. I can't remember exactly what the ticket was for, but it was failure to maintain proper something on the road. And they didn't care. And the third ticket I just dismissed, and that was only about 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard anything back from them since.
Double. I heard N1 something about that. The N1 first, go ahead.
KC1 SAM.
Go right ahead, Sam.
We're exempt in Connecticut. I keep a copy of the exemption in my vehicle at all times. Never been stopped. I don't really do a lot of mobile talking, but we are exempt and I keep a copy of it in my vehicle.
Very good, Sam. Tom, I think you said, but maybe I didn't hear it. Were you fined so far? And are you call it as Whiskey 2 Golf Juliet Alpha? Back to you, Tom.
Whiskey 2 Tango Juliet Alpha. And yes, I was fined, and the fine was $150 with a $25 surcharge.
NY2H.
Go ahead, Lou.
All right, Dick, I got a couple of things, and we'll hit this one first, but I wanted to talk a little bit about SDR, and I want to talk about the current state of the repeater system, just so that you can get a better understanding of some of the quirks we have in this temporary configuration. So I have in my car, I'm in my car now because, certain reasons I had to use this radio tonight. I have a letter from the State of New York Department of Motor Vehicle. I keep it in my glove compartment. And this was something that Mike Lysenko had solicited in 2013. And it's from the Department of Motor Vehicle. And basically, it's a free pass. I mean, I could read it. It's about a page and a half. It's up to you.
If you think it'll give us good information, go right ahead, Lou. And you live in Suffolk County. I'm pretty sure that you have, I'd like to believe you haven't gotten any citations. So even in Suffolk County, even in Port Jefferson, my goodness, is there discrepancies here. NY2H, go right ahead, Lou.
Well, I got stopped about a year and a half ago, I guess. And I had this letter and a big smile on my face, and I was very polite. And he said, well, let me see the wire that's connected to the radio. And I showed him, and it was all good. So, yeah, dear Mr. Lysenko, this is in response to your letter of August 6, 2013, regarding the application of the Vehicle and Traffic Law, VTL sections 1225C, 1225D, to the use of ham radios. So I'm speaking with you, and in reading your correspondence, a ham radio functions as a two-way radio only. Is not accessed through a wireless telephone network, nor can this device be used to access wireless telephone service. With the above understanding, it is the opinion of this department that VTL section 1225C, the cell phone law, does not apply to the use of two-way radios, meaning a radio with a two-way dispatch function that does not use a telephone network functions like a walkie-talkie. The user pushes a button to talk, and is typically used with a speakerphone embedded in the device. Such devices are not mobile telephones as such, and they go on and on, but you get the flavor of it. Back to you.
That's beautiful, and I sure wish that Tom had a copy of that during his encounter with both the policeman and the judge. Part of what's going on here is there's a huge difference that's very subtle that most people don't realize, the difference between simplex and duplex. In the case of a telephone, almost all telephones are full duplex. In other words, while you're talking, you can simultaneously hear the person you're talking to, whatever they're saying. That gives you such a tight coupling where you're inside of each other's head that there are times when the emotion from one person through the radio system can be heavily conveyed to the other person. Many of us have seen a person on a cell phone while driving down the road waving his hands in the air and shouting at the top of his lungs. You can tell he is expressing anger to the person he's talking to. That's because it's full duplex. It's a simplex system where you push the button to talk, and now you talk for the next 30 seconds, and you can compose your thoughts because there's nobody in your head except your own thoughts while you're talking. You release the button and you receive, and during the time you're receiving, you don't say anything to the person because they wouldn't hear you, because it's a simplex system. So some of the huge importance of ham radio being not tying you up where you still can pay attention to the road and be a safe driver is because it's simplex and not full duplex. That's part of what's going on. And somehow that concept is not being as clearly conveyed as I wish it was. Do you think I'm off base on this one, Lou? NY2H, K2RIW, do you read that into his reply?
NY2H, well, you're correct. When full duplex is more distracting. And just for the reasons you stated, the emotion and everything else. I mean, if I'm talking now, I'm not really hearing what you might be thinking or saying. So, I think it's less onerous. But yeah, I think we had this public on the web. We'll have to check, but maybe you can go on to the, I don't know if we had it on our website, on LimeWire or not, but it's been very handy. You know, and it's on their letterhead. It's the commissioner's name is on top, and deputy commissioner and counsel, first assistant counsel, legal bureau. So, you know, basically, the police understand that the interpretation of the law comes out of this department, this agency. So all they'd have to do is take this into court, and his ticket's going to be thrown out, so he doesn't bother writing it. That was my impression.
Yeah, I'd like to believe that that letter is available on the LimeWire website. Unfortunately, the LimeWire website has got to darn many things. And unless you know the right department to go to even start going down the list to find it. But I'd like to believe that letter is there. And From what I am hearing, if Tom could have presented that letter to the policeman, there's a chance the policeman would have let him go free. And now, because it is by a respected portion of New York City, Suffolk County law, a major decision, I'd like to believe that the judge that Tom came before would say, okay, this case has previously been adjudicated, and a decision has been made, and I'm going to honor that decision. I wish Tom had a copy of that letter when he came before the judge. W2 Tango Juliet Alpha, K2RIW. Go ahead, Tom.
Two questions. One, you said I can find it on the Limark website. Do you know the forum, the exact forum name that it's in?
No, what I said was I hope we have it up there. We obviously had it up at one time because I was able to print it out. It could have been on an ARRL website also because at the time, Mike Lysenko was the director of the Hudson Division. So he may have published it up on the Hudson Division site. There's a division site under the ARRL. So if you go to Hudson Division, he's no longer the director, but he was at that time, and it might still be up there. In addition, right after that, I have stapled to it. There was a case, the People versus Bozak, and this happened in Troy, New York. And it was the same thing. He was dismissed under that section. See, the law is written, and for some reason it makes a mention of the switched telephone network, and that's a weakness from their point of view, or it's a strength from our point of view, because it's so specific, and I think that, you know, that's black letter law, so they can't really, support their position. I know there were other laws passed since then, distracted driving, etc., but this is the decision from council, from the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles, so it would be statewide. Back to that.
EC2GS?
Go ahead, Roy. By the way, the fact that it's the Motor Vehicle Bureau of New York State, boy, that sounds like it should happen. It should work for the whole down state, maybe even in the five boroughs of New York City. Go ahead, Dr. Roy.
Casey, want to say it? Dick, I just wanted to say I found the letter, and it's got a kind of a long link. I could read it to you, but rather than do that, what I would suggest is later on after I finish my little segment, I'll include a link to this letter as well on roy.ac2gs.com.
There you go, Tom. You're going to have direct access to that letter on Roy's website, which he's going to be giving you. At the end of each one of his science talks, any new additions get added to his list where he's giving you the URL where you can get a hold of good things. Let's see what Sam's got to say. I'd like to believe that Connecticut is smart enough to have a similar rule. KC1 SAM, K2RIW. Go ahead, Sam. APG on the list. APG's on the list. Sam, go ahead.
Hey, well, I had basically a suggestion. There's an exemption in the state of Connecticut, which I found, I printed out, and I keep it in the vehicle. I don't do a lot of mobile, but I have it if I ever need it. But I was going to suggest, if officially from Limark, perhaps a letter to the DMV and asking for a clarification. I mean, it's a club, it's asking for official legal clarification. And that would really solve the problem once and for all. And that information might get disseminated out to law enforcement even. So it may be of some help that way. But that's just, what I'm thinking of. Back to you, Dick. Thanks for picking me up.
Great information, Sam. Dave, N2APG, what would you like to add to all of this? And have you ever gotten a ticket? You're a safe driver.
Okay, N2APG. Yeah, I have concerns about making comments on this topic, quite frankly. There's a couple of things that come into my head. And I don't think it's going to be a popular view as far as most hams, but I'll try to explain it as best I can. First of all, getting back to the legislation and clarification on the law and all that other stuff, you know, one thing you might have to be concerned with, too, is that if you make enough stink about this, about ham radio operators and the law, okay, it may backfire. You may get actually a law that says, now we're going to include ham radio operators into that law. And if you're using a ham radio in your vehicle, now you will get a ticket because that's going to be against the law. So you have to be careful with that, too. All right? But let me drop it, and I'm going to get into my real comment. All right, let me preface this by saying I don't think a lot of hams are going to be happy with what I'm about to say. But listen to what I'm going to tell you, okay? Because I have some experience with this stuff. Now, we've all listened to QSOs on the radio. We've all heard people miss their exit or make a wrong turn or this and that. Personally, I went through a red light about 10 years ago when I was on the radio. I literally did not notice the light had changed, and I went right through a red light at about 45 miles an hour. Thank goodness I didn't have an accident, but it could have easily killed myself, killed somebody else. It would have been a very bad situation. And that was all from being distracted, talking on the radio in a QSO. All right? Bad, bad thing. So here's my take on all this. Everybody's concerned about getting a ticket. Everybody's concerned with the legality. Is it a VTL violation? Is the cop going to give me a ticket? Am I going to have to pay a fine? That's all fine and dandy, but let me drop. I think what's happening is that we're not seeing the forest because the trees are in front of us. Everybody's concerned with the ticket. Everybody's concerned with the legality. What I'm going to tell you is that there's more to this to look at. And what you really should be concerned with is, are you being as safe a driver as you can? Are you being somewhat distracted? May that contribute to an accident? Maybe you're going to have an accident down the road because you're talking on the radio. Maybe you're going to get hurt, okay? Maybe you're going to hurt somebody else. So that's really what you should be looking at. The reason they pass these laws, don't talk on a cell phone, whatever, distracted driving, is because it's a dangerous habit. It's a dangerous situation that contributes to accidents. It contributes to people getting hurt. It contributes to people getting killed on the road, okay? And if you don't think that's the case, you're wrong, all right? Because I have experience with that. So that's all I'm going to tell you, all right? Think about the big picture. The big picture is you don't want to have an accident, you don't want to hurt somebody, and you don't want to get hurt yourself. And by talking on the radio, that certainly, in my opinion, might contribute to that. Back to that, N2ATG.
You've made a couple of good points, Dave. However, after you went through that red light, you realized that you can be distracted. It maybe was very early in your mobile ham radio experience. And as you developed more experience, you knew not to take your eyes off the road, even though you're talking. Make sure that you look around first and there isn't another car, or there isn't another stop sign, or there isn't another red light cross section for the next 30 seconds, because I'm going to look at the front panel of the radio to see what channel I'm on. I mean, you have to be careful. There's a learning curve here. After you've been through the learning curve, it is my belief that a trained ham radio operator can be almost undistracted while talking simplex while driving. That's a belief. I can understand that you might disagree with me on that, but was that red light experience of yours in the early experience of your ham radio doing mobiling? And because you knew that you have to be extra careful, my guess is whenever you did ham radio mobiling again, I'll bet you never went through another red light after you've been through that experience, and it taught you you got to be extra careful. N2APG for a comment, K2RIW.
7K2OGB.
All right, N2APG. No, this actually happened when I had a lot of experience driving, when I had a lot of experience using a radio. And it also happened when I thought I was a very careful driver. And after that episode, for the most part, I don't really talk on the radio when I'm in the car. I will listen because I find by listening, I can handle that. It doesn't seem to create such a problem. However, being involved in a Q-cell, for me personally, okay, I find it extremely distracting, I guess you would agree. Well, put it this way, it takes my concentration away from the number one priority, which should be paying attention to my driving. All right, so now I'm thinking about something else at the same time that I'm trying to consider, you know, think about driving. So that's, again, you know, that's just my opinion. I wanted to throw it out there because I think it's important. Everybody, you know, everybody thinks it's not going to happen to them, but it can and it will, and it does. Back to that.
Okay, Craig is next. KD2OGB. Go ahead, Craig.
Question: when this happened, was there actually a red light camera when this happened?
I don't think so. I think he realized he went through a red light, and was there a red light camera there on that red light that you went through, Dave? I'll bet you there was not.
Negative.
So, Craig, there was no red light camera there. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, because that would be much worse if there was one. I can see everybody making a good point here, but out of all the times that I've used mine, I've never had trouble. I have had a couple of times where a police officer was behind me, and I actually still had my microphone in my hand, and here's what I did. I moved either just to the left lane or the right lane, and they just went right past me. I spoke to somebody that I sometimes work with at the Railroad Museum in Riverhead, who is retired for Suffolk County and Transit. With a lot of modern training and how it's very intense, police are not really going to care unless it's been used in connection with a crime or an accident does happen.
That's probably true for 85% of law enforcement people, but a certain percentage of them are saying that, hey, a person should not be using a mobile communication device while driving. I'm seeing it, and therefore I'm going to give the person a citation, even though no accident has occurred. There are a certain percentage of people who fall into that category, I believe. Back to you for a comment on that, Craig.
Yeah, that could be true. To make matters worse, I even get nervous if I'm just listening, because sometimes they could still ask what that is, and that makes all of us even more worrying.
By the way, for people who like to see your beautiful ham shack and whatever, go to QRZ.com and take a look at what Craig's got, KD2OGB. Also take a look at what Roy's got, AC2GS. Beautiful looking shack, which you can now see the software-defined radios and whatever, and the computer setups and the way he's able to run three computers at once with a chat room and IRLP and ham radio and so on. And mailbag. He's able to run a. He's keeping a whole lot of balls in the air at once. So some of these guys have got some beautiful pictures that you can see on QRZ.com and then put in their call letters. You're not going to see any pictures of my ham shack because it's quite homely. And okay. Anybody with any further comments on this particular subject? It looks like there's no clear answer. It looks like you're at risk when you're using ham radio while driving. You are at risk of possibly getting a ticket, and according to Dave, you're at risk of creating a driving infraction because even though you think you're not distracted, you are partially distracted. K2RIW, I'll be listening for any further comments.
KC1SAM.
Go ahead, Sam.
Dave's point is well taken. That you can still make mistakes even though you think you're good. But I'll comment on his other thought, which he sees as a negative, and I see it as a positive. If the club sent a letter asking for a clarification, it would come back one way or the other. It would be black and white. You would know. It wouldn't be a case of, well, I'm not sure, so I better put it down. If it comes back as illegal, you know it is. If it comes back as okay, you know it is. I would rather know one way or the other than not know, you know what I'm saying, than try to hide it. If you know it's not right, then you know. And it's up to you if you want to do it or not. But I would rather have the answer. So anyway, KC1SAM, just standing by. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, Dave, too. And thank you, Richard.
KB2MER also. Okay, that person was very noisy. Please give us your call letters and name one more time.
Okay, this is Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo. Name here is Gabe. You might want to consider using a Bluetooth wireless microphone, like a Vox setup in the car. That'll make you always look straight, and you can talk without holding a microphone in your hand. Over to you, Dick.
W2HR. Okay, HR recognized that. MAR, a hands-off mic, like a headset, is an improvement. However, distracted driving, just looking at the front panel of your FM radio or your satellite radio is a distraction. Having the wife in the car is a distraction. For a teenage person, having another teenager in the car is a serious distraction because they're less experienced and they're really worrying about social contacts with their fellow students, if you know what I mean. So there's all kinds of distraction. I mean, having your wife in the car, under normal circumstances, you wouldn't get a ticket for that, even though that could be very distracting. The new person that just joined us, go right ahead, K2RIW.
I'd like to get back in here in 2EO, please.
This is W2HL. Good evening, everyone. Dick. I just tuned in. Did you guys mention at all about the New York State vehicle and traffic law part that applies to amateur radio operators?
Yes, Craig did. Talked about the fact that the Motor Vehicle Bureau for New York State has already made a pronouncement on this subject, but not everyone is accepting it. Mr. HL, go ahead.
Okay, it's a gray area, I guess. They're always changing, but I think that by and large, the law is was put in effect to address cellular phones and distracted driving. I'm sure it was not imposed to apply to amateur radio operators, and I think that judges have abided by that protection of amateur radio operators. But of course, all police don't know. Anyway, just wanted to ask you about that there, Dick. And is Howie here, and good evening to all. And have a great evening, W2HL.
And then W2EO with some comments.
Yeah, we've had the comments on each side of the aisle here, Howard. Is it legal? Have there been official pronouncements by the Motor Vehicle Bureau of New York State? Yes. It sounds favorable to us, and yet there are other people saying that even though it's a simplex transmission that you do with ham radio most of the time, it still is a distraction. And Dave has been candid enough to admit that he has gone through a red light while using ham radio, and he thinks he wouldn't have done that if he wasn't using ham radio. So even if it was legal, he thinks it's dangerous, and therefore we should try to avoid it. Rich, we've stuck on the subject for quite a long period of time. Please try to be a little bit brief. N2EO, K2RIW, try to be brief, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I couldn't come in here before. I was laying down. I'm sick. I think I'm getting sick all day. Anyway, I first wanted to address W2BZ with this problem. Those adapters that go from SMA to female and SO239, I had two of them, and they both went bad. Intermittent. They have a terrible reputation. As far as I'm concerned, they always go bad. So you might check that. The other thing is, I know what we're talking about going back and forth. I agree with APG, I forget his name. If it's illegal, don't do it. And I believe the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club has a vested interest in keeping people talking on the radio. I say it's illegal, don't do it, period.
N2 JKB. Yeah, thank you, Rich. N2, it sounds like JKG, Juliet Kilo George, is that true? Go ahead.
Juliet Kilo Victor.
Okay, Juliet Kilo Victor, please give us your name and then your comment, sir.
My name is John, and actually in 2011 I went to the appellate, went through the Nassau court and then went subsequently to the appellate court, and they overturned a conviction because I was using amateur radio in a vehicle. And you can look it up, if you look up N-O, like the abbreviation for number, N-O space 2009-1584 space N space C-R. Or perhaps just do People v. RAFFA, R-A-F-F-A, and you'll see where the appellate court overturned.
Okay, and do you believe that is a precedent that all other radio amateurs are able to use, or is it something that's only specific for your particular case? What do you think, John?
No, it's a precedent that was set in New York State in 2011 under the law.
Okay. You're in November 2, Kilo, Tango Kilo Victor, is that true?
November 2, JK Jumping Kilobolts.
Okay, you live in Garden City. So, so that case, I noticed that the name on the case and your last name are the same. So that was a specific appellate division for your particular case. I'm a little bit worried that some persnickety judge is going to say the circumstances of this case is slightly different, and therefore RAFFA does not necessarily apply. I'm a little bit worried that might, although it may not be fair, a judge might make that pronouncement. Over to you, John, K2RIW.
Yeah, thanks, Dick. You know, I'm not a lawyer. Actually, I did represent myself, but I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know any further details. I do know that just prior to that, there was a case up in Albany where somebody won in a lower court. But as far as I know, I may have been the first one to win in an appellate. And they basically turned around. They said amateur radio doesn't apply under this law. I mean, I think when you look it up on the internet, they'll give you a very short summary of the case, but there might be a way to drill down and get more details of the case. But they specifically said in open court that amateur radio is not applicable under that law.
All righty. I thank you, John. Good information. And as you can tell, it's not super clear. There seems to be decisions in our favor. There seems to be decisions or circumstances, according to Dave into APG, which are not in our favor. From Dave's point of view, it is a definite distraction. In fact, almost everything that takes place inside of your automobile, other than you on a super well-rested day and no one else in the car and the car behaving perfectly well, anything short of that is going to be a distraction. Looking at the radio on your front, listening to your FM radio, having another human being in the car, having the car make some noises, squeaks or thumps from the engine. There's a zillion things that can be a distraction. And so what I'm worried about is that if we try to avoid all distractions, it may be a frivolous pursuit. It may be almost impossible, because even if no one else is in the vehicle, we all do a little bit of daydreaming, particularly on a long drive. If you're taking an 8-hour drive, and maybe you shouldn't take an 8-hour drive, if you take an 8-hour drive, you're going to be thinking about some other portion of your life in the past or the future. And with your eyes on the road, you can be distracted. So driving is kind of unique, kind of dangerous. My goodness. And right now, there's lots of PBS information about completely automatic. Let me drop. There's a strong effort going on right now with Toyota, among other automobile manufacturers, to come up with a kind of artificial intelligence that will automatically be driving the automobile. There is a strong possibility that a well-engineered automatic driving system will have a lower accident rate than human beings. Well-concentrated, paying attention human beings. So even if the accident rate goes down to 1/100th of what it is right now, every time a automatic driving system has an accident, boy, is that going to be on the front page of the newspaper. Whereas 10 times or 100 times as many accidents with human drivers, we sort of accept that. 35,000 people die per year in the United States in an automobile because of accidents. So it sure would be nice to lower that number. If we get that down to 1/10 because of an automatic driving system, when to get the bugs out of it. Right now, a total of 3 people worldwide have died while they were trying to ring out the specifics of an automatic driving system. I think it's got a good possibility. It's going to have to be a combination of ultrasonic, infrared, radar, optical. It's going to have to be a good computer system with all of those sensing systems and good training of the system in order to be better than a human being. I think it's going to take place. I think better than a human being, a machine driving an automobile is possible. Anybody have any further comments? K2RIW listening.
Dick, M2EO, I'd like to go back to bed. I have to say something.
Okay, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, first off, I'm going back to bed. I don't feel well tonight. Tell W2BZ that those adapters from SMA to SO239, the cable there is very thin. It's just RG174. They all go bad. Two of them, they both went bad. So that's 100% failure rate. Also, I don't know. Maybe it's sour grapes on my part, but I don't drive anymore, and you know why, Dick. But I don't think I want anything in the car. I would never want to have to go to money, and the fines are high. I say don't use mobile. It's illegal until we know I'm clear.
Okay. I know that Craig definitely, or BZ, or Rich definitely heard your comment about the that particular adapter being unreliable, particularly certain brand names. And, okay. I think it's time we go over to Roy. And, Roy, if you think it's appropriate at the end of your discussion or near the end of your discussion, maybe I'll give a puzzle that I've been stirring for 4 weeks. I've got a tough puzzle, which I think is educational. But we're going to go over to Roy right now with the mailbag, if there is any, and the science talk. AC2GS, K2RIW. Go ahead, Dr. Roy.
NY2H.
Stand by, Roy. Lou, go ahead with your comment.
Thank you, Dick. All right, just for explanation, the systems that we're using right now are on an interim basis, and we have some, little foibles here and there. And one of the things is, just for an example, somebody was on before, and you told me he'd come right back. Maybe he couldn't because our Echo Link right now, if he was on it, has a Vox control, which is set a little too high, and he's got to wait for things to clear. Also, if anybody wants to comment from the East End and anybody's on the West End, you're not going to hear the person on the East End. So what frequently happens, it happened to me about three or four times already tonight, is people will be commenting on the West, and when those comments are finished, then you go on to the next thing. So anybody on the East that was trying to get in, or on Echo Link, or RLP, because they're being serviced on the East End right now, will be precluded. So just so you know, right now, you know, hopefully in about 6 months or so, everybody's going to get an equal shot. We'll have everything full duplex link between the feeders, and you'll at least hear two people competing. So I just want you to be aware of that operationally. And then I want to make a comment on the SDR.
Yeah, so let me repeat what I think I heard. Even if we wait long enough for full dropout and full resetting of the machines, are you saying that anyone tonight on IRLP or Echolink will not be able to get into this repeater tonight? Is that sort of what you're saying because it's going through the Eastern Link? Over to you, Luke.
not negative. What I'm saying, and I really didn't want to have to spill it out on the air, but basically this is a situation that's temporary. If you're listening on the West End, and somebody's transmitting on the West End, you're not going to hear anything coming in on the East End because we have a half duplex link. So that anything coming in on the East End includes people coming in on 975, people coming in on RLP, people coming in on Echo. They're all functioning, and if you drop it, you know, nobody's broadcasting on the West, you'll hear everything. But frequently what happens is you'll ask for additional comments, and you'll get two or three in succession, all from the West, and anybody who's trying to cut in on the East at that point will be precluded. So I guess what I'm saying is, before closing the topic out, maybe you want to make sure that any people from the East End are coming in. It's temporary. We're going to go full duplex maybe at the beginning of next year, and then at least you'll hear all the there's actually people trying to get in that cannot when those sequences occur. That's all. But no, everything's functioning. We have RLP is up, Echo Link is up. And I think you're going to go to Joe also. I don't know if you can do that in the middle of the science talk or not, but in any event, I just want to quick comment on the SDR also. I'll turn it back to you.
Good thing you reminded me about Joe. So if we allow a real drop on the Western machine, the 85 machine, then a person coming through Echo Link or IRLP by way of the Eastern machine would be able to come in. We have to not be too quick on the key in order to allow them to come in. That's sort of what you said, Lou. Go ahead.
So let me give you an example. All right, we're talking on topic A. Anybody have anything else to say? NTO comes on. Okay, that's from the West. Somebody else comes on from the West. And they say, all right, you know, let's go to the next thing. Problem is, if somebody was trying to get it from the East, you wouldn't hear them. Unless you kept saying, is there anybody else, and you waited 5 or 10 seconds, I guess that's what I'm recommending. Is there anybody else, and you wait 5 or 10 seconds, and you get dead air after 10 seconds, then you know you're done. Otherwise, you know, people may be precluded, but that's, again, that's only temporary, and I just wanted to advise you of it so you know. And like the guy that was coming back, you said, oh, you can pick up right away. Maybe he could. Again, because I have a Vox situation, but I have to readjust to, because what's happening is Echo Link's getting locked up. It's two sensors, so it's getting the beep and everything, and he's got to wait for everything to clear, and then he can transmit stuff. So it's just things sort of just take a little longer than usual, but that'll all be remedied. Quick on the SDR, I think Roy had it right. Let me let it drop, and I just want to, and I'll be off the air in a minute. Let me just let it drop a little. You know, the distinction between software control and software defined, I mean, what are we defining? Well, software defined radio is defining the heretofore analog components. You know, your coils, your capacitors, your resonant circuits, they kind of all go away, and they're being recast in the software realm. So one example is you can record the IQ data and play it back and pick up a different signal in the bandwidth that you've recorded. Use a different demodulation technique, FM instead of SSB, let's say, etc. So the whole concept is basically you've got to think outside the box, if you will. And they should almost call it software replacement radio, because you're replacing components with, field programmable gate arrays. And it's the programming, like Corey said. Next edition of firmware has software to demodulate in a null mode. So that's important. And the control he was talking about, it has the server, and it's great because I can do this from remotely. Again, Corey is spot on. That's just control. That's just like taking the knobs and stretching them out to the next state, but you're still controlling the knobs. Nothing to do with the actual software.
Interesting, Lou. I thank you. Before I go over to Joe, it's good thing you reminded me because I almost forgot about Joe. Is there any other comments you want to make? Oh, by the way, one quick question for Roy. Roy, AC2GS, you monitor many things. I know that if somebody's on chat room and he didn't get through, you let us know about it. If somebody is trying to enter by way of EchoLink or IRLP, are you also monitoring that so that you know that the person didn't get through? There are a number of times when you told me somebody's trying to get through. AC2GS, K2LAW.
Yes, Dick. As far as EchoLink is concerned, I can tell if someone's trying to get through. They're sending break signals that aren't being received, or they're sending texts. Unfortunately, the way IRLP is constructed, I have no real easy way to know if they're transmitting. I mean, maybe Lou has a workaround for that. I can open up a web page and see if there's activity on IRLP of what other repeaters are software linked to it, but I can't figure out yet how to tell if anyone's trying to transmit. Usually, the people who operate through IRLP also tend to know about the chat room, so they'll come to me in the chat room and they'll say, I'm trying to go through the IRLP and no one's picking it up. So that's usually how I know what's going on the IRLP, through the chat room.
Lou, please make comment on that. NY2H, K2RIW.
Yeah, Dick. So, what I don't know if Roy is aware of this. Right now, the chat room is we're doing it on the cheap. We're not paying. We could pay and get all sorts of bells and whistles, but doing it on the cheap, in other words, for free, there's a limit of 10 people in the room. So that, just be aware of that. Also, we never get to that count. We get to 4 or 5 occasionally, as far as I can see. But so there is a limit there. There's also a limit on EchoLink, number of participants. RLP, I'm not sure. I am putting together an RLP node, but I can just tell you that if I was listening to that node, it would be the same deal. In other words, if the person couldn't get in, it was probably because somebody else is in the node, namely W2VL. So yeah, there's no. It's not as easy as EchoLink to figure out if someone's trying to get in and frustrated. But there are limitations, the number of attendees in the chat room, and so on and so forth. But, you know. All right, I hear things going on. But, you know, so far that's sufficient. So, there you go. That's it. NY2H.
Did I hear your GHO want to make a comment? Okay. Let's go over to Joe. This is at the time that Joe was going to be available. KB2RYY, K2RIW. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm coming in via IRLP. I said I'd have an open slot. I can transmit on the radio on VHF, like between 10:50 to 11 o'clock. If the question doesn't take that much time, I don't want to cut into Paul's time or too much into Roy's time, but I can't transmit on high band right now because I'm recording something off the end. If I transmit on high band, I'll knock my converter right off.
We're hearing you beautiful, and you're in that scheduled time right now, so go right ahead, Joe.
Okay, you want to do it that way. All right. Well, I have a question and a comment. The question is this. I'll first describe what I was doing. I have two old radios that are around 1985, 86, 87 vintage radios. One's a tabletop radio, one's a portable type radio. All right? And they both had bad volume controls in them. And I talked to somebody else about this particular problem. And this is third-hand information. It didn't come from the guy I was talking to. It came from somebody else he was talking to. So it's third-hand information. What the guy said was, don't use tuner cleaner. Use WD-40. I did. I used WD-40. I gave it a spritz in both radios and the volume controls. Immediately cleaned up the problem. Here's the question. Why? Why does that work with tuner cleaner? Does not seem to want to work as efficiently. Back to you, Dick.
that's a toughie. WD-40 was invented in order to absorb water that's not supposed to be in something. So by some means, WD-40 manages to make water inert by sucking it up somehow. So that was its original design, I believe. The W is in there is a water, and I forget what the D stands for. And so Tuna Cleaner is trying to get rid of an oxide. And so something about the intermittent contact in a volume control. Now, your volume control, was it noisy or was it a complete open circuit? I've had volume controls become a complete open circuit where they make no contact no matter how I adjust them. I've had other volume controls that are very noisy. And so WD-40 sounds like a good thing to use. And there have been other substances that people can buy that are much more expensive than Tuna Cleaner, which they claim does great things, much, much better than Tuna Cleaner. I've used Tuna Cleaner in the past. In certain situations where I used it, it worked great for 1 hour, and then it stopped working. But maybe the super expensive Tuna Cleaner-like stuff would be better. Maybe I should have tried WD-40. The price was right. W-A-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
D stands for displacement.
So water displacement, number 40. Okay. Go ahead, Joe.
And WS2N.
Paul, go ahead.
They used it for the original Atlas rockets. I mean, they experimented and they came up with the 40th different experiment. You know, they finally came up with this particular solution. And the idea was to keep the metal parts as dry as possible because of the high humidity down in Florida. And, you know, that was the goal. They didn't want anything to rust up. Things would stay out in the open for long periods of time. So it had to do with the Atlas rocket originally.
Good information. So have you had success with WD-40 on potentiometers, Joe? The B2RYY, K2RIW?
Yes. I had success on the two potentiometers, which were very, very noisy. Not open, very noisy. And I just told you that. And I fixed both radios, which are like 1985, 86, 87, 50s radios. So they're over 30 years old. And it splits the WD-40 and the volume control. Each radio, cleaned them, and they're still working. And I did that repair a couple of days ago. And they still work fine. And I originally tried Tuna Cleaner about a year or two ago. And it did just like what Dick said. It lasted for about an hour or two, and then it just seemed to go away, and it went right back to its original problem. So you sort of answered my question. Well, yeah, I don't think you completely answered my question, but I was just more curious than anything else why that seemed to work when Tuna Cleaner does not really want to do as good a job. So there's one for you. So that was my question. Now you want my comment?
How did you get the WD-40 in there? Did you disassemble the radio and squirt the WD-40 into the back of the potentiometer through the input contacts, the three contacts, or were you squirting it down the shaft from the front panel? How did you get the WD-40 in there, Joe? Go ahead.
I disassembled the radio carefully, and there's a little, like an indentation on one side of the pot on each one near the controls. And then we'll stick the little small tube for the can in there. Just give it a good spritz. It just bubbled up and worked the control back and forth. Plugged the thing in, worked it back and forth some more. Cleared the problem. So I was happy. Because you're probably trying to find that type of potential.
Yeah, that exact potentiometer, particularly if it's a dual concentric potentiometer, may no longer be available, like the squelch control on a Kenwood mobile radio. The Kenwood's a 741, I think, a 746. The Kenwood mobile all-mode 2-meter radio. That squelch control, which is a dual control for RF gain and squelch, that frequently goes bad. Back to you, Joe.
Oh, I didn't hear your complete transmission. My CWID on my IRLP cut you out. So what was your beginning of the transmission reference to that Kenwood radio?
The Kenwood 751 has a squelch control and RF gain control that are two concentric controls. And the squelch function almost always becomes an open circuit. and so you no longer have that pot at all. It's a frequent failure on a Kenwood 751 2-meter mobile all mode. Over to you, Joe.
Well, I never had that happen. I own a Kenwood radio and a Shep radio, but never had the pops completely open up. So that's unfortunate if you have to try to repair that. So I'll come out with a comment. I happen to see something on YouTube, which I don't know if you or Paul have ever seen this video before. And it's titled Riding the Booster. And what it is, it's a video about 400 seconds long of the camera off of one of the shuttle boosters. And it shows you different angles looking down at the ground as it's taking off and looking up as you're flying up. And it has a clock running on the thing that gives you time in, like, seconds. And also gives you the speed of the device itself. And with the thing went about as high as 2,700 miles an hour. So don't know if either one of you guys have seen that video yet. I just happened to stumble by it a couple of days ago. Back to you.
Sounds like a fun video to watch. And by the way, you just hit 10 o'clock on the nose, or you're about to. So I guess we're walking out of your available window. Is that true, Joe?
Well, actually, being that I'm transmitting into the IRB, I'm not interrupting the recording device from that's recording now. So that's not a problem. I can do this on USF. It doesn't bother my electronic equipment. So now I can talk for a while. I really don't have much more to say, but anyway. That's a fun video to look up. You know what? I'm going to turn on my computer just to verify that. And later on, I'll give you, if it's the information they gave me is incorrect, I'll give you the correct title to look for, okay?
GXM with a comment.
GXM, go ahead.
H-R-I-W in the group, WD2 GXM. Regarding the WD-40, you know, it does leave a coating. That's how it does its water displacement. It displaces the water with a coating. Now, my guess would be that it actually is leaving a coating on the carbon underneath the wiper and the potentiometer. It's reconditioning the carbon that the wiper wipes across. WD2GXM. Comment and one whitey white.
Go ahead, Hank.
I can't tell you why, but I know that in aviation, use of WD-40 in things like potentiometers is prohibited. There's a couple of products that you can use, the aviation version of Deoxit. I understand he said he used something similar to it and it didn't work for him. And there's a thing called BoShield that you're allowed to use, and you can buy that commercially also. I don't know why WD-40 is not allowed, but it's actually one of the things they get very upset about.
So you're saying on aviation equipment, WD-40 is specifically forbidden to be used on potentiometers and things like that, is what I think you're saying.
You know, it's aviation legalese, so, you know, they say it's not on the list of approved materials and approved substances, but, yeah, essentially that's it.
Okay. It's not on the list is one kind of restriction. But specifically restricting it is another. So I think you're saying it's the first condition, not the second condition. There still may be some people who have used it and had some success, but kept quiet about it.
It's actually written in such a way that you know that it's not allowed, period. It's not just that it's not on the list. They don't want you using it, and it was named, you know, in a, I can't remember if it was an AD or an MD. But, you know, it was one of those things that got specifically named in something I read 20 years ago. But the product was named by type, Thou Shalt Not.
WS2N.
Paul recognized, before we go to Paul, it sure would be nice if they said it's not to be used, WD-40 is not to be used on aviation equipment because it has this side effect. That would be an effective statement. If they just tell you it's not allowed to be used, and not give a reason, and some people think it's a biased decision, and it's done without objectivity, and there's no specific reason. People will worry about this. There's a lot of cases where you should give the reason, because it creates a extra conductivity, it creates a phony circuits, it creates a dendrites, it creates mold. It causes water to be stored in a local area that eventually creates problem under on a 2G turn. You know, I wish something like that specific had been said. WS2N, go ahead, Paul, K2RIW.